Right now? Are we on the air, lady skill,
yes,
now?
Yes, we are.
I'm sorry. Hey, yo, bust a move.
This is James Butler of Sex Clock 5, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network in sports.
I'm Tom Rowan Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. We have all sorts of stories for you today, including stories about parole justice reform bills in Albany and the Clean Slate Bill for formerly incarcerated folks, and also the protests at Representative Paul Tonko's office in Albany over environmentalists that want him to do more on that issue. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. Plus, it's New Music Friday, so we'll hear some new sounds, and it all takes place after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Connection and the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
WGXC welcomes audio responses from listeners. Anyone can call and leave a message with WGXC, and we'll play it on the air. Call 518-291-WGXC and leave up to a 3-minute message for airplay. Hear something you disagree with? Want to speak out on an issue? Plug your band's show? Let your neighbors know something important? Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message anytime about any issue. That number again is 518-291-WGXC. 518-291-9492.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by Kravitz and Son Roofing, a local family-owned and operated full-service roofing company for more than 48 years. Specializing in residential and commercial roof construction, repair, maintenance, and replacement, using high-quality and affordable roofing products. Information at 518-567-4026 or online at KravitzandSonRoofing.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Blanche Mackey Photography of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You have tuned into the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. I'm Tom Rowe in Acre. Melanie Lakosovic is reporting for Columbia Green Media that a bill introduced by State Senator Michelle Hinchey to study the financial challenges facing rural emergency medical service providers was approved unanimously June 2nd in both the state Senate and Assembly. The measure is now on its way to the governor's desk for his signature. The bill would establish a 12-member task force to come up with solutions to the challenges facing ambulance services. Rural EMS providers have faced substantial financial hardships for years, as well as a shortage of volunteers, and the COVID-19 pandemic has only intensified the problem, Hinchey said. Quote, I represent communities that don't have a local hospital, communities where residents have to travel more than an hour away to reach the nearest trauma center, unquote, she said. Greene County Memorial Hospital, formerly located in Catskill, closed its doors in 1992. The nearest hospital is now Columbia Memorial Health in Hudson. Greene Emergency Medical Services President Mark Evans said, quote, first and foremost is obtaining adequate funding. Municipal agencies are taxpayer-funded, but nonprofits or private may or may not be. Rural EMS has longer transport times, longer distances to travel, costing more in fuel and wear and tear, unquote, he said. The challenges go beyond the financial, Evans said. Quote, finding personnel from a small work pool is very difficult, and if none exist in the rural area, then you have to entice people to travel to your area, unquote, he said. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Clarence Fanto is reporting for the Berkshire Eagle that the Boston Symphony's plans for the Tanglewood Festival now include a 3-foot social distancing policy for ticket holders seated inside the Kostovsky Music Shed for all symphony-related performances. The policy decision was based on guidance from the Traytown Health Department, the state and U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. While masking and physical distancing will no longer be required, the orchestra announced both precautions are recommended for unvaccinated audience members. The regulations from the local health boards limit total attendance to 9,000, or half the venue's normal capacity. During the July 9th, August 6th through 16th BSO and Boston Pop sessions, no more than 2,400 listeners will be seated in the shed and 6,600 on the lawn for those performances. The 9,000 overall capacity allowance will apply to all 2021 popular artist performances, but there will be no capacity restrictions in the shed, which seats 5,000. The most current information about the venue's safety policies and procedures will be posted at tanglewood.org/safety. In a related story, Fanto writes that for the second consecutive summer, there will be no James Taylor concert at Tanglewood. Taylor's August 31st performance has been postponed to July 4th, 2022. Quote, I'm disappointed and frustrated to have to announce the postponement of my August 31st concert at Tanglewood, unquote, Taylor said in a statement. Tickets purchased for the original date, July 4th, 2020, will be honored on July 4th, 2022. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle. And Morgan McKay is reporting for New York State of Politics that the Adult Survivors Act, June 3rd, passed the state Senate unanimously, but it has stalled in the state assembly. With only 4 days of legislative session left, advocates are questioning the assembly's priorities. Quote, we are alarmed, unquote, wrote the Sexual Harassment Working Group, a group of former legislative staffers who were sexually harassed or witnessed abuse. Quote, we now remind the assembly it is your responsibility to pass laws for the good of New Yorkers, unquote. The act would allow anyone who has been sexually abused as an adult, 18 years or older, 1 year to file a civil claim, no matter how long ago the abuse occurred. The bill expands upon the Child Victims Act, the 2019 measure that gave survivors a chance to sue if abuse occurred when they were under the age of 18, resulting in more than 5,000 civil suits statewide. Assemblymember Linda Rosenthal, the bill's sponsor, defended the assembly's slow action, pointing to how long it took the Child Victims Act to pass, how there are more members in the assembly. She also says it has been a challenge to push the measure to the forefront with so many lawmakers working remotely. In response, the Sexual Harassment Working Group cited the assembly's history of blocking, delaying, and running out the clock on any effort to help survivors. Quote, you can choose to enact a series of bills that would help survivors and prevent sexual harassment and violence in the workplace, unquote, the group said. Quote, instead, the assembly has prioritized its time in creating a cover for the governor with an unnecessary investigation at the expense of taxpayers, unquote. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a sunny Sunday with a high of 88 and a low around 66. Monday should also be warm with a high near 89, and there is a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 5 p.m. Monday night, the low is around 69 with a 30% chance of rain, too. Tuesday, there is a 60% chance of showers and possibly a thunderstorm after 2 p.m. with mostly cloudy skies, a high of 82 and a low around 67. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
Find out where the music takes you on the next Deep Threes, when Andrew Bain uses jazz to spread a positive message. Mark Battier takes his cues from a work of art, and Sean Moran travels to faraway places. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Laura Kunreuther of Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Listen to music and voices. Listen to art and discussion. Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to up and down. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to purple and green. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to the planet. Listen to ladies and dummies. Listen to books. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to bath time and nap time. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to stars and stripes. Listen to Texas and listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeples. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Listen to clouds and leaves, bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio, WGXC.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I am a graduate of Columbia Greene Community College, and I'm also from Hudson.
I am Georgia, and I'm from Hudson.
So I'm Fatina, and I'm 7, and I'm also from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
Books we hate.
Bookish.
Things.
And that's what we'll do today. So, who wants to start us off? How about Amelia?
Oh, that's me. I'm still working my way through all the manga I bought. I was kind of not reading for the week since I was recovering from stuff. I just kind of spent the whole time watching a ton of movies. I mean, I watched the Amityville Horror for the first time. That was fun. That's like an older movie. That's from the 1970s, I think. I thought it was cool. It's not exactly a book, but it's a piece of media that is interesting. So I spent the whole movie like way more worried about the dog than I was than for any of the people. So
yeah, it's hard being a dog in a movie, especially a horror movie.
The dog was okay. Everything was okay. But I was really worried about that dog.
Yeah. Just for the record, The Amityville Horror, A True Story by Jay Anson is a book.
It is.
So I don't know which came first, the movie or the book.
The book probably came first. That seems to be how it tends to go.
Yeah, I don't know when it's based on like a true story. I guess it could go either way.
Yeah. I also, book related, but also movie related, I finally got my mom to watch The Great Gatsby. And that was fun. Since she was stuck home with me, I decided to take advantage of that. And I was like, we're going to watch The Great Gatsby. So we did. And it was good.
Yeah. So I just heard about a book for adults that is coming out this month or maybe just came out. Oh, yeah. Just came out this week. And it is called The Chosen and the Beautiful by Guy Vaux. And it is a reimagining of Great Gatsby with an Asian queer main character.
Oh, nice.
So it sounded really interesting and has a beautiful cover, which we always like because we love to judge books by their covers, even though you're not supposed to. We all do it.
Yeah.
But I thought of you when I saw that because I know how much you love The Great Gatsby.
It is true. We do. I do sometimes judge books by the illustrations. If the cover is just like plain beige and worn out, I'm most likely not to read it.
If the cover is like worn out, it's more interesting to me because it's like, wow, a lot of people have read this. It must be worth something.
Well, I mean, if it's like if it's boring, indicating that's from like really old, like torn and like wrinkled and like really beige and all the colors washed away, and like the title is something really boring, like
The Old Man in the Sea,
like I'm like sorry. Something boring, like
The Old Man in the Sea.
Yes, well, that isn't really a boring title, but anyways, I do mostly for me, I more judge a book by its description.
It's a better way to do it, or its author or illustrator if you know them. Did your mom enjoy The Great Gatsby?
Yes, she did, actually.
And that was the Leo DiCaprio one?
Yeah.
That I know you love.
Seen the original. I just like the Leo DiCaprio one because it's very pretty. It's just a very, very pretty movie.
Yeah, agreed. Well, I hope you get to catch up on some reading now that you've recovered from your teeth. I feel like... I'm not sure if you wanted our radio listeners to know that you got your wisdom teeth removed because you're...
Oh, it doesn't matter. I just...
You're a little less wise.
I'm so happy it's over. I was really scared.
Yeah. We talk about teeth a lot on this show.
Teeth is a very common subject here. I have no idea why. Just everything leads to teeth.
Terrifying.
It's either teeth or The Old Man in the Sea. Neither are things I very much like to talk about.
Especially Old Man the Sea.
Ugh.
Speaking of Old Man in the Sea, so, just kidding. I actually don't have anything. I was just messing with you.
Do you have a book you want to talk about, Georgia?
I sure do.
Woo!
It is called, and for most radio listeners, this title will be like, I know this book. I've heard the title. Or at least most people have seen the TV adapted version. J-A-M. Jam.
Jam?
It's not really called Jam. I'm doing initials.
Oh.
The initials.
Oh, Just Add Magic.
Yes! Ding, 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 ding! Just Add Magic. Jam. Hey, actually, I should call it Jam because they do, like, it's about cooking, so.
Make some jam. So what is it about?
It is called Just Add Magic. It's by Cindy Callahan. Originally, I saw the TV show version and binge-watched the show. I watched it all of the seasons in like a few months. And so the show is really good. And then I like the show, so that it just kind of started a trend among the girls in my class. Like everybody was talking about Just Add Magic, which is funny. And then I asked my mom, well, you know, the book is always better than the TV show. Can I have the book, please? And my mom said, sure. So I got the book and I love it so much. So I'm going to read the description. Mix together three 12-year-old girls and one mysterious old recipe book. What do you get? A secret cooking club with a touch of magic. When Kelly Quinn and her two BFFs discover a dusty old cookbook while cleaning the attic, the girls decide to try a few of the mysterious recipes that are inside. And they made a lot of changes in the movie, like, first off, the appearances of the girls, and then also, like, the events and the cookbook is very different. A lot of things are different, but I really like both. Like, both of them. This is the first time that actually, like, the show is good enough to be equal to the book. Well, the show is one of my favorite shows, but the book is one of my favorite books. I love the book. It's so amazing. I would totally recommend this. And Cindy Callahan's description is, Cindy Callahan writes stuff tweens love to read.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. Well, also kids love it, too. Mm-hmm. So, not only tweens.
Sounds really fun.
Yes. But do tweens do love it?
Do you have a suggestion for anyone that's interested in reading it and watching it as to which order they should do that in, or does it not matter?
I'd say read the book first, because the book really mostly just captures like the first episode of the show. So I think you should probably first read the book and then watch and then go through the series, because each part is like a different storyline. But same girls, and like the past is the past, you know, that it's love, those continuous, not the ones that you can just like, it doesn't matter what, or it's love, those continuous. So it continues. So I'd recommend read the first book first and then watch the show. The show, if you're looking to stream it, is only available on Amazon because it is a Amazon original.
That sounds fun. Maybe I will check it out too.
Have you read the book?
No, I haven't. I haven't read it.
How did you get it then?
Well, you held up the book slightly and I saw GIC. So I figured out that it was magic and I just guessed the other words because I'm so wise.
Wait, all that you saw was magic?
I saw GIC.
GIC?
Yeah, I saw just the end of magic.
Oh, and how'd you get Just Dad?
I'm just very smart.
Of course. Isn't that a given?
Years of practice. It's possible I've heard of the book or series before, and that deep in my brain I knew.
That's probably a bigger possibility.
Yeah, more likely than that I'm so smart.
Like magically came up with it. I think that you probably heard it somewhere.
Well, thanks for sharing that. Fatio, do you have a book you wanted to share today?
Yes, I do. And the book's title is The Day It Rained Hearts.
Hearts? Oh, I know that book. Not well. I'm excited to hear about it from you.
One day it started raining hearts. And Corsarella catched one. She catched another. And another. It wasn't very hard, so she catched some more. It must be getting close to Valentine's Day, she thought, and she set to work making Valentine's and hearts. She created wood make perfect crafts so that all of her hearts were different. She looked at each one from the front and the back and the side, and which ones would be just right for each of her friends. She found, seeing that we're more or less alike, and then together with a necklace and chain, I know just the right person for this one, she thought. Then took and had some heart and pieced it on a piece of paper. Bit the clear of the heart. She ate the ball one that was very white and very soft. And she knew intentionally who this it would be for. On the one she draw prints and the deck. Then very carefully cut them out. Put a stamp on each of her Valentines and mailed them. It never rained hearts again. Mount Personnel lived far away. But it didn't matter because next year and the next and all of years after that, person found other ways to make Valentine's. And that's the end.
That's such a great story. You are an amazing reader.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's such a great Valentine's Day read. But yeah, it's nice to read holiday books all throughout the year. We have
holiday books for all different holidays, and kids will check them out any time of year. They don't care if it's the holiday or not. A good book is a good book anytime. That's what I say. So what did you like most about that book, Fatia?
My favorite part was like about when she was like catching Valentine's, mm-hmm. a lot of Valentine's. That was my favorite.
Yeah, it's fun to imagine Valentine's just falling from the sky. That'd be pretty cool to look at. So I think that was one of the books from our February early literacy bags that we give away at the library. And so if you're listening out there and you have a young person in your life, probably 6 and under, I'd say, we have some giveaway bags at the library that have crafts and books on different themes. And so we have our June bag is ready. So if you want to claim one of them, it's a limited supply. Just give the library a call and set up a time to come pick it up. You can have your very own bag of goodies. Yay.
I also got the paint and the stamp and some papers with that. It's like a mini notebook, and it had a deer in it, and I love this so much.
Oh, I'm so glad.
And I was like painting all the time.
Yeah, I should make sure to get you a bag for this month because the theme is rainbows and all of the colors of the rainbow. And I know how much you love rainbows. It's got some cool books in it that I like a lot.
See if we can get one for my little sister. Like, do you mm-hmm. think that like 4-year-olds?
Yeah, definitely.
Yay. The library. Oh. One problem for her is being quiet.
That's okay.
Yeah, she is awesome. And also she can be quiet. I mean, last time she was in a library, she is like 2.
Yeah, actually, so she's matured a lot since then.
Yeah, she was only 2 the last time she's been to a library, so it's been 2 years. She can be quiet if she wants to now.
She's a champ.
Champ, champion Zadie.
I have a cute book to share that I read recently, although actually I didn't read it, I listened to it, but it still counts. And it was actually a very short audiobook. I think it was only maybe an hour long, because it's a short, like, early chapter book.
That's long.
An hour?
Well, technically, oh, for somebody to slowly read it to you, then
yeah. So this one is called Jojo Macoons, and it's by Don Quigley with illustrations by Tara Audibert. And, oh, so sorry, it's Jojo Macoons, The Used to Be Best Friend. So it's the first book in a new series from a new imprint from HarperCollins Publishers called Heart Drum. And it is a imprint that focuses on the voices and stories of young Native American heroes. And so this is the first, I think it's the first publication from that imprint, and the first in its series. And it is about a young Ojibwe, I guess almost tween, a 7-year-old named Jojo Macoons. And it's like a classic early chapter book where you're introduced to the character and some things happen, but it's not like a huge like plot arc. But the character is so charming and the stories are funny. And so I really enjoyed it. But her name is Jojo Macoons Azure, and it sort of talks about her family and her teacher and her friends. Her best friend is Mimi, who is her cat. Then she also has a good friend named Fern, but it part of the story is that it doesn't seem like Fern maybe wants to be her friend anymore. So it's about her figuring out how to deal with that. And there's some adventures with Mimi the cat as well, which are funny. And so, yeah, I'm excited to read more in this series. I don't know when the next book is coming out, but I really liked the character and definitely want to read more from her. She reminded me kind of like of a Ramona, you know, like one of those sort of like spunky characters that you just are drawn to.
Ramona, Junie B. Jones.
But yeah, it was fun and funny. And you learn a few Ojibwe words while reading it too.
So that was a book for younger readers that I read this past week. And I also read a book for teens called Charming as a Verb, which is by Ben Philip. And it is about a senior in high school named Henry, who is very charming. He's on the debate team. He's really popular at his school. He goes to a prestigious academy in New York City. And he's a first generation Haitian American. And his family has high hopes for him, as does he. He really wants to go to Columbia University, which is a prestigious university. And a lot of the book centers around his application to school and like planning to apply to that school or other schools. But one of the things he does for money is that he is a dog walker, and he's created a fake business website for like this big dog walking company, but it's really just him. And his fellow student and neighbor, who he actually walks the dog for one of his neighbors who's a classmate, she finds out about his scam. She figures out that there's not really this big dog walking company. And so in classic teen literature style, she blackmails him into helping her improve her image at school because he's popular and she's not. So she'll keep silent about his dog walking business if he helps her create a better image for herself. And her goal is not actually popularity, but it's to come, she wants to come across in her college applications as like a well-rounded student. So not just the smart girl who's involved in clubs, but somebody who's really personable. And but of course, as happens in teen literature, where these kind of things happen, eventually they become more than just this blackmail relationship. They realize that they actually like each other, and
that always happens.
Some things happen that complicate things, which I won't talk about, but it was a really good book, and I really liked both of the main characters. They felt very realistic. They weren't like perfect human beings, which I like when characters have their flaws. But yeah, it was very good.
Speaking of which, I'm reading a book that's definitely not meant for middle grade readers. It's like definitely meant for like 13 and up.
Feeling a little old.
I bought it at the bookstore. I went to the Chatham bookstore for the first time in a year, and my mom let me pick out one, and I chose that. I thought it was like more of a girl power book, but it ended up being like a romance novel set in Argentina.
Huh. What's it called?
Furia. Romance novels are not my thing, I've discovered, but I mean, it's okay. There are some parts that I just kind of skip over.
Is she a soccer player?
Yeah. How'd you?
I think I've heard of the book.
Oh, it's a good book. Just I would not recommend it for kids my age.
Too romantic.
I'm just like sharing a book that's not meant for kids my age, I know.
Well, but you think it would be good for older teens?
Yeah, like I think.
Or younger teens even.
Amelia, do you like romance novels? I don't really like them, but.
Well, it depends. I don't know.
You should try it.
It also depends. If something has like a ton of misunderstandings in it, it gets so annoying.
No, there's not really any misunderstandings.
But like otherwise.
Just like a famous soccer player. And that girl, like, they used to be Dane. They date again. And then she's like, oh, no, he's gonna leave. I'm only halfway through the book. So that's where I am.
Oh, okay.
Right
okay.
Now. And then also she's volunteering as a teacher at St. June for money. It's actually not a horrible book as far as romance goes. I'm not really into romance anything. Not romance movies. Not romance TV shows. Especially not romance TV shows. Nuh-uh, that is a no-no for me. Books? I'll make an exception, but TV shows or movies, romance, nah. The main genre better be comedy or I'm not watching it.
I have more of a tolerance for romance, I think, in TV shows or movies than I do in books. Like it can be sappier in TV or movie than in a book. In a book, I can take light romance, but.
Yeah, I mean, this one is mostly romance. But like
a little soccer.
Yeah. So some of it is girl power. It's not all romance. Some is girl power.
Cool.
Out of a 1 to 10, I'd rate it like probably like a 6 or maybe like a 5.9.
Well, maybe if you finish it, maybe it'll get better or worse.
Maybe. I don't know. You know, it's a little above average. It's pretty good.
So it looks like Mashuda just joined us.
So I think Mashita has something that she would like to share.
My book is Surrounded by Idiots by Thomas Erickson. So do you ever think you're the only one making any sense or try to reason with your partners with disastrous results? Do long rambling answers drive you crazy, or does your colleague's abrasive manner get your back up? You're not alone. After a disastrous meeting with a highly successful entrepreneur who was genuinely convinced he was surrounded by idiots, communication expert and best-selling author Thomas Erickson dedicated himself to understanding how people function and why we often struggle to connect with certain types of people. And Erickson will help you understand yourself better, hone communication and social skills, handle conflict with confidence, improve dynamics with your boss and team, get the best out of the people you deal with and manage. We also share simple tricks on body language, improving written communication, advice on when to back away or when to push on, and when to speak up or indeed shut up. Packed with aha and oh no moments, Surrounded by Idiots will help you understand and influence those around you, even people you currently think are beyond all comprehension. I feel like this book is hard to explain because, like, Surrounded by Idiots, like, I feel like we all go through this every day because, like, we all meet different types of people every day. And it's like a lot of people judge people like based on first impression. So it's like that. And also, like, in psychology, that shows like that people often take that like for the all of the meetings, because if you meet someone and they put an impression that they're not smart, whatever they say, if it makes their logic makes sense later on when you're meeting them, people tend to not trust them anymore. And also growing up in school and everything, I feel like those are people who sound smart and look smart, people took them seriously. And those are people who don't sound smart or look smart, they're actually smart, but they're not taken seriously. And people often like look down onto people and say, like, call them idiots, but when actually they're not. They might say idiot things on one subject, but they might have a better idea on others because everyone's different. So, but like people often judge quickly and not trust the others. So, like, for example, like that book actually gives you in details that in order to be successful, we should like listen to everyone's opinion and rather than just disregard them by calling them idiots, because if everyone was good at everything, then everyone would be engineers or doctors. Like, we won't be all different things. Like, we're lucky that everyone is good at different things, or else we wouldn't have like teachers, nurses, doctors, engineers, all sorts of things. And every person is unique in their own way. And because of that, society happens the way it is. And we all live like happily. This, like, I feel like because like we can all meet our different goals. So it's like that book actually like really helps me. I feel like when I'm reading it, so I like really, really recommend others reading it, because especially in college, it's like all new. It's just like, it's not high school anymore. And it's like all different. And you're meeting like people which are like much older than you or younger than you. And like, it's like all sorts of people from around the world. And like, I feel like that book actually helps like navigate that. Yeah, I'm sorry. I think I spoke too much, but.
No, that's fine. Sounds like an interesting book with some good lessons in it. Is that something you just picked up on your own or something you're reading for school?
I just came across to it, and then like the cover actually took me in. It's like, I'm surrounded by idiots. It's like that just made me read it. And then like when I actually started reading it, I know like it's not what it is. He's not actually surrounded by idiots. It's just like he goes through like different tasks and he understands how to navigate himself and becoming a successful entrepreneur, because he has to meet different clients and all sorts of people every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's important to be able to interact with people with different interests and different knowledge areas and strengths and weaknesses, and, you know, to be able to
connect with people on a human level and with respect. Good skills to have.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're just about out of time for today, but we hope everyone out there listening has a great week with lots of quality reading time, and we'll be back next week to talk about some more books. Until then,
happy reading! Sorry, I just had to do it.
Raindrops are falling on my head, and just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit. Those raindrops are falling on my head, they keep falling. So I just did me some talking to the sun, and I said I didn't like the way he got things done. Sleeping on the job, those raindrops are falling on my head, they keep falling. But there's one thing I know, the blues they send to me, but that doesn't mean my eyes will soon be turning red. Crying's not for me, 'cause I'm never gonna stop the rain by complaining, because I'm free. Nothing's worrying me. Steps up to greet me. Raindrops keep falling on my head, but that doesn't mean my eyes will soon be turning red. Crying's not for me, 'cause I'm never gonna stop the rain by complaining, because I'm free. Nothing's worrying me.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Art Omi in Ghent, New York. Open daily from dawn until dusk. Art Omi Sculpture and Architecture Park presents the work of contemporary artists and architects across 120 acres of field and forest. Now accepting advance registrations for visits on weekends and select holidays. Information at artomi.org.
Congressperson Antonio Delgado held his latest town hall meeting in Hyde Park on June 1st, and it was his first with actual citizens in person asking him questions since the pandemic began. Here's a sampling of some of the questions and answers.
Hi, Congressman. How are you?
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Sorry, I just finished mowing the lawn, so
no problem. Hey,
that's an excuse to look. I had a personal question and a bigger question. So my personal question is, I received the first two stimulus checks. I haven't received a third one at this point. That means I should be contacting you, is that correct?
Yes, it does. Okay. And we're happy to help.
Okay.
So please contact us.
All right. Yep. I could, Amanda is my district director. Like, the last checks had gone out like at the end of April. Yeah.
There have been some issues, but we've tried to help whenever we can, particularly around the stimulus checks. So we should definitely reach out to our office and we'll follow up.
My second piece is about, you talk a lot about broadband and expanding that. And if I'm remembering correctly, there was some issues about the whole net neutrality and how the internet was being, I guess, doled out, or the internet itself was being used. And I just wanted to know, where is that at, and what are you thinking about how that, your expansion of broadband, how is net neutrality going to affect that expansion?
That's a great question. So net neutrality, right, we had a big effort, I think it's maybe now 2018 and 19, but it was definitely last Congress where we had a lot of robust debate around net neutrality. And we passed legislation in the House to protect net neutrality, understanding that we're talking about accessing information, as we learned through COVID, critical information and life-saving information and small business saving and educational, for educational purposes, or for telemedicine. At every angle, we've learned that broadband access is a necessity. It's a basic necessity. So I want to just say a couple things about this, because net neutrality presupposes, first and foremost, that everybody's on the net, number one. And so when I talk about broadband, first I'm talking about making sure everybody has it, right? So the fact that we have folks going without it is really an issue. But once we get that piece resolved, I do think that we have to be in a position where people aren't having access to the internet, but relative to other folks, because they don't have the means to access it, they might as well not be on the highway. They might as well be in the ditch somewhere watching cars just whiz by them, because the access points and who gets what and how fast and how download speed, the upload speed, is just outpacing whatever they can afford in the first place. And so while they might have it, relative to the rest of the marketplace, they're being lacked. And so because this information and because what is provided, the goods, the services that can be provided via the net, I think we have to have baselines here. You know, we have to have baseline speeds. In fact, I introduced a bill. I say that a lot, but we try to make sure that we're focusing on these issues. My bill would ensure that we have a baseline of 100 megabits. 100. Right now it's 25 for speeds. That's ridiculous. We had an expert come into the SBA, our Small Business Committee hearing. I asked him point blank, is 25 sufficient? He said, no way. In a couple years, they're going to laugh at us. It's got to at least be 100. So you have a baseline of what needs to be provided to every consumer, right? And then the access points, you have a baseline of what those access points need to be, how fast you can get there. If there's a way, and again, I think that's a third level analysis. Those are the first two levels. The third level analysis is, okay, maybe once you figure out everybody has it, and you figure out what the baseline of speed is for folks, and that it's effective, then, and that's secured, then if there's ways in which, you know, you think about how to provide optionality to folks, you know, and packaging for different folks, maybe you could think about that at some point. But before you even get to that point, you have to hit these two markers first. And that's how I look at it. You have these are the priorities. And if we're focusing on already trying to slice up who can have what and when and how, before we even get these two things figured out, we're pulling the cart before the horse. And that's not right.
Richard Maddox.
How you doing, Richard?
I'm doing well, sir. And you? How are you doing right now?
My new favorite expression is hanging in there. I'm hanging in there.
Thank you very much for coming to our community to hold your first public in the open.
Yeah, no, my pleasure.
Very good. I'm on the Conservation Advisory Council. We're involved in a variety of different environmental type things, of course, one of which is climate change.
Yes.
The town itself and half a dozen of the folks here have all walked their talk and on that issue and have signed up for the community solar program. The town, is all of its electric bill, all of its electric meters will be on renewable energy very near future. In the course of going through our due diligence process to identify the organization that we eventually worked with, the repeated question a repeated comment that I had given to me was, we don't have enough staff in this particular field, in the green fields, in the renewable fields. We don't have the people trained to be able to fill the jobs that we need. Could you kindly comment a little bit on your position and perhaps your vision for the future in terms of getting staff that can do the job?
Yes, I can. There's two ways you can go at this. One is the pipeline in terms of the younger workforce that's coming through our middle schools, our high schools, and all of the wonderful community colleges that we have specifically in our neck of the woods. So that's one way, and I'll speak to that. The other way is making sure that we're creating the jobs that are available and incentivizing work in those spaces and incentivizing investment in the creation of these jobs. So I have a bill called the Green Jobs Bill. The Green Jobs Bill would basically say we need to conduct a one-year study, and I know time is precious when it comes to climate change, so I understand, to figure out what are the exact jobs that we have to create and fill to get down to the carbon emission numbers that we know the IPCC has said, listen, we have to be able to hit if we're going to turn this thing around. Once we have that set of data, we then can create a pilot program, and we can say, all right, we're going to fund our community colleges, we're going to fund our high schools, we're going to fund even down to our middle schools, those types of programming that are meant and designed for the purpose of training young people for these specific jobs. So you're reaching now back into our younger workforce that's being educated, creating a more targeted, intentional pipeline of support that gets them ready for jobs that can happen. And hopefully these are kind of jobs that they can earn really good income on, sustainable income on, for the foreseeable future. But you gotta get them early, and you gotta get them ready early so that when they're coming of age, they can fill those jobs. The other piece though is this. I talked to a lot of folks who work in the fossil fuel space, a lot of folks who build pipeline, who've been doing it for decades to support their families, right? This is how they make their living. We can't come to those individuals, those families, and say, sorry, figure it out on your own, right? No. I mean, when we thought it was a good idea collectively as a country, you know, because we thought we weren't, I guess, at that point yet fully aware of the magnitude of what we were doing. We're now there, but back then, no one was saying to them, you shouldn't be doing what you're doing, right? And so the point is, we have to be in the position now to give them priority as well, and figure out, and my bill does that, figures out, okay, how do we train individuals who may be working in other industries, not make them foot the bill to do so, right? Give them priority so that they can bring their expertise maybe in a different field, but in the energy space, in the energy sector, into the renewable energy sector. Give them priority in terms of training. Make sure that they're comfortable making the transition. So it's you're both pulling in the existing workforce with incentives and with a workforce development programming, and you're reaching down into the emerging workforce. And hopefully by bringing those two worlds together, you can begin to fill in some of the gaps. So that's the bill that I have crafted. I introduced it last year. I wanna get it now again in this Congress. We're going to push it through, hopefully the House, and we'll see what goes with it. But that's, to me, one of the ways we can address this issue. Thank you. All right. I think I've been told we're bumping up.
Last week, State Senator Michelle Hinchey gave her first town hall meeting online since being elected last November. And here is an excerpt of some of the questions she took from constituents.
From Sarahana from Ulster Park, how will you ensure an effective number of climate legislation will pass this session?
Climate legislation and supporting our climate is incredibly important, as I've said, and it's one of my top priorities. I was really proud that one of the first bills that I ever voted on and my first time speaking on the floor of the Senate was on the constitutional amendment that we passed to make the right to clean air, clean water, and a healthful environment part of the New York State Constitution. That is a huge step. I mentioned the Environmental Bond Act that we included in the budget that will be on the ballot in 2022. And we have a couple bills that we are pushing that speak directly to this. We have a soil health bill, which is a Soil Health and Climate Resiliency Act. This bill creates in law a program to help support farmers in practicing climate resilient farming practices and good health practice or good soil health practices, giving them incentives and tools to adopt these practices like no-till farming, using cover crops. These are things that will dramatically help. And there are ways that we can bring in our farmers as strong partners in the fight against climate change, especially here in New York, as we're working to preserve more open land across the state. We also passed our rebate bill for municipal electric vehicles. That was a great thing. And two things coming up, I'll say that we have prioritized and that we are pushing. The first one being the Extended Producer Responsibility Act, which I am proud to co-prime sponsor along with Senator Kaminsky, which puts the onus on the manufacturer to deal with the packaging. I think we've all received packages from name the place you order online that has come much larger than it should. A tiny little bottle can be in a big box with a lot of plastic. That's unacceptable. And that cost is then pushed to our municipalities who are unable to pay for this anymore, and the costs are skyrocketing. We are working to shift that paradigm so that the producers of this packaging are incentivized to close, to use less packaging and to use fewer resources, which I think is a great bill and really important to do and quite frankly overdue. There's also the CCIA, which is also something that I co-sponsor. I'm proud of it. It's a priority for this year. It's a priority always, which we'll be pushing also in this session.
Great. Our next question is from Vincent in Kingston. And it says, can you please address our area's home care aid crisis? The system is broken and negatively affecting the health of the elderly.
That is true. Many of you, although maybe not all of you, know my story with long-term care. My father passed away in 2017 from frontotemporal degeneration, and he required extensive long-term care. And we actually had to sell land to pay for his home care. And that was a crash course for me and my family in just how broken our healthcare system is. We have to do better. We can do better. One of the things that we pushed for in the budget this year was fair pay for home care. This is a bill that would raise the minimum wage for home care workers by 150%. The average home care worker earns about $35,000 a year, which is, we're trying to get them to earn that. Right now they earn just over $21,000. That is unacceptable for the importance of this work. These are people that care for our loved ones in the time of crisis when we need them most. They allow us as family members to be grieving family members as opposed to home care workers, or as opposed to caregivers. You know, we have to support this sector and we have to grow it. Unfortunately, that did not make it in the budget, but we built a ton of support around this. It was out for some other technical things we still need to work through, but we are pushing this as hard as we can to make sure that we can do it. This bill also includes incentives for bolstering home care as opposed to nursing homes. It encourages studies to make sure that when you look at a community, if you need home care workers instead of nursing homes, that we can take some of that money to support home care workers and to build that out. So it's an incredibly important issue and one that we are fighting for.
Great. And staying on our healthcare topic, our next question is from Mark from Canajoharie. And it says, could you please give us an update on the New York Health Act and what we can do to increase the chances it can be passed this session?
Yes. So I am proud to be a co-sponsor of the New York Health Act. As I just shared in my personal story about my dad, we know that the system is profoundly broken. We also know that we need to, if we're doing this in New York, we need to do it right because we are going to be a model for the rest of the country. And if we do it right, we set us up for success across the nation. If for some reason we do something that leads us to failure, it's going to shut down, I think, a lot of talks at a more national level. And so there are a lot of incredible things in this bill, but there's still some questions that need to be worked out. We've actually been talking about this bill specifically this week. In